So the title of the talk this afternoon is Samadhi or Samatha, Calming and Cooling Down. And last night Christopher and I were talking after his trip to Nablus about how incredible it is that in this world with all the philosophers and the professors and the priests and the rabbis and millions of people going to school for years and years and years and the politicians, nobody's found a way of solving the problem here in the Middle East for about 90 years. It just continues year after year after year, causing so much suffering and so much pain that you read every single morning in the newspapers, and with all the intelligence that can watch the universe and the stars, no one can solve the problem. And it feels like there's something inbuilt in the human mind that makes this impossible. That it is some fundamental block that can't solve conflict. And it's, if you look at the human mind, if you look at our mind, I think it's pretty clear that the capacity of everything to annoy us is quite big. Anything can come along and annoy us. Anything can come along and cause us conflict, disturbance, irritation. A little virus is just doing its thing. A small virus just comes along and innocently tries to make itself at home in us, and it's at home, and we start getting sick, and we start getting fed up, and then we're angry at the symptoms, we want to stop them, then we're angry at our mind, that what we want to go to work, we don't want to lie down, we are struggling with the virus, with the body, with the mind, with the, and it's just a virus, tiniest thing we can imagine. We want to be deeply quiet, joyful and peaceful all the time, and it doesn't happen. Disturbances are constant, and we identify life as a problem, and deep down somewhere underneath we're busy with it. We're identifying, we are labeling, or we are assuming somewhere deep down that life is against us and that we need our armor and our defenses and our reactions and our busyness to deal with life. Life needs to be dealt with, coped with. And somewhere or other we all want to escape. One of the most well-known of the suttas of the Buddha is the Fire Sermon or the Fire Sutta. It's a really powerful sutta. It's strong. It's got a very powerful metaphor. And the Buddha said, it's all burning. It's burning. What's burning? The eye is burning when it sees. The ear is burning when it hears. The nose is burning. The taste is burning. The mind is burning when it conceives or when it knows. What's it burning with? I want, I need, I expect. Something has to come out of this that's good for me. I don't like this, I don't like that. There is constant busyness with life there, coming in through the senses and having to be dealt with. Just think how much we are busy with our expectations and how restless we are from this. How we... We're constantly burning. And now we burn the planet. The planet's now burning. With 6 billion burning people, we're burning the planet. I mean, it's a very strong image. I think one of the best ways of looking at this is friction, chikuch. Because friction between two things that are not in harmony or that are rubbing against each other creates heat. So where you have resistance and friction, you have heat. And heat is this two things rubbing against each other. Why are we rubbing against life, creating heat? Life is us, we are life. I'm part of the world, you're part of the world is in us, we're in the world, there's one flow. Where's the friction? As soon as we are in opposition and in resistance, the heat starts. One of the best known metaphors for awakening is the word nirvana. And nirvana essentially means cooling down, quenching the fire, cooling this burning. It's a beautiful metaphor. It's only a metaphor. Nirvana is not a condition. Nirvana is an image, a word carrying an image of cooling down. But it's as potent an image as the image of burning, which is our struggle with life, our friction, our resistance. Nirvana, cooling down, quietening down. It's interesting that in the East, there is an image, there's a very strong image of fire belonging to the universe. And when you put out a fire, it goes back into the world. So it's not just cooling the fire, it's the fire returning home back into the universe. It's just a cultural image of fire that makes this image of nirvana as cooling the fire, putting out the fire as a potent image. The fire then is not located in one place, burning, 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 but it just sort of goes home, back to its elemental, absorbed back into the elemental universe. So, what about stopping this, calming it down, cooling down? How can we face this? How can we cool these fires? The first thing we realize is that we can't put out fire by adding more fuel to the fire. So just by wanting to stop, or just by putting pressure on ourselves to stop, it's not enough. It's adding to the fire, it's not taking away from the fire. So we can't do it by force. We can't do it b'koach. We can't stop by force. We can't stop by control. If we try and control ourselves, we're adding more pressure, we're adding more fuel to the fire, we burst. We're just sort of controlling ourselves, we want to stop, and we put the lid on the pressure cooker, and then the pressure builds up. It doesn't stop the fire. It doesn't turn out the fire. It just makes the pressure cooker. Here in the meditation room, if we force ourselves to be calm, we realize it doesn't work. Control can put us in a prison. We're going to try and control, for example, to control our reactions to a disturbance that happens here. To control our movements. To be tight and controlling about, oh, I mustn't move too much. I must be steady and I must behave like a calm meditator. doesn't work. It just builds up pressure. We can't do it by switching off. It's a great temptation just to kind of go to sleep, to take the anesthesia, to, you know, want a general anesthetic. Please put something in my arm. We'll stop all this disturbance, all this craziness. Give me an injection. And some people, really need it. I mean, put down the deep rest and the going to sleep, and some people really come to retreat exhausted and just need to sleep for 2 or 3 days, and this is fine, and I'm delighted to offer this possibility that of just going to sleep. But that's not going to solve the problem. And so neither control nor pressure nor censorship to say I shouldn't be disturbed, it's wrong for me to be disturbed, it's wrong for me, I know I'm in stress, I shouldn't be under stress. All of these voices don't really work, because they simply add more fuel to the fire. One of the most beautiful images, and again a very powerful image of stopping, is in the Angulimala Sutta, where the Buddha faced a murderer in the jungle that killed a very large number of people, and he alone went into the forest to try and help this person, and at the same time save more lives. And he just told Angulimala, stop. And he said to Angulimala, I stopped. Now you stop. And Angulimala was trying to, you know, fight him, run and kill him. And he said, stop. I stopped. And this sense of stopping, I stopped. The Buddha stopped. It isn't that the Buddha didn't act, or he acted more than we could imagine. He gave 10,000, I think it's 10,000, I don't know exactly, Christopher, you can tell me. Maybe 10,000 suttas or talks that are recorded. He didn't stop giving, talking, acting, being in the world. But something deeply stopped in him. And what stopped was this friction, this struggle, this sense of struggle that created in Angulimala the need to kill thousands, hundreds of people. So let's look at what helps us to stop. What is this calm wing of the bird that Christopher mentioned yesterday, the calm side of the bird of calm and insight? And what is it? What is calm? First thing, the word samadhi or samatha, it comes from the word to gather, to collect. It doesn't come from a word to control. It comes from the word to gather, like gathering sticks or gathering, collecting, gathering together. And we can immediately respond to that. We feel when we are aware, the moment of concentration or a moment of attention, a moment of arriving here, of just arriving, something is gathered together. We are gathering ourselves together to be right here. Instead of being spread all over the place, distracted and so on, we gather together. This word is often translated as concentration. And it's perhaps the classic word that we think of as meditation practice, concentration. The word is not wrong, but it is too one-sided. Because concentration implies that we have to, it's a bit aggressive. It implies that we are homing in to an object such as the breath, and what we have to do is cut out all the other stuff. In other words, we have to be sensor of other things in order to privilege the breath or any other object. And so concentration has in it a little bit too much part of the same problem that we're dealing with, which is being against things that disturb concentration. But being against is part of the problem, is part of the fire. So we don't want to be against for the sake of concentration. And so although concentration has in it this gathering, this sense of focusing, it's a little bit too strong. Another way of looking at it is a sense of steadiness, a sense of stillness, a sense of less fear, less insecurity, less fear that makes us scattered or agitated or restless. More quiet, steady being. And that's also inside the group of qualities in the calm, inside the calmness, inside the sense of being calm. So let's look at it a little bit practically. How are we doing this, and how can we wisely approach the issue of samatha or samadhi, gathering ourselves together to be here right now? Well, the first thing, and we shouldn't underestimate it, is that we are helped by conditions. We come to retreat because a retreat does help us. It is useful to reduce the stimulation, to a little bit shut down the all the tsunami of stimulation, impulses, and the world of conflict that we experience every day. To kind of little bit go inside the vessel, close the door and say, right, I'm taking time off now. It's wise to be able to externally help us to cool down a bit. And we can do it in our daily life. And we know how difficult it is to if we don't actually do something to help us, for example, to sit every day. Something, even some ritual, some closing of the door, some finding a quiet space, some appreciation of sitting under a tree. The Buddha did say, you know, sit under a tree. The Buddha didn't say, okay, 10 children in the house and money problems and family shouting at each other, and there's your, and start there. He said, come sit under a tree. Sit down, put your attention here. So there is an external aid, and we should appreciate it. The Buddha invited us to be less busy. Yes, you've got a really, really hard job. Examine carefully, can you cope with this job? Do you have the inner resources to be in this job with mindfulness, with awareness, and with and somehow grow inside you in the job that you're doing every day, all day? And if you cannot, and if it's endlessly disturbing, maybe you have to leave or change your job. Maybe not. But just consider in your ordinary life this whole issue of the volume of disturbance that can be a tsunami, that can be overwhelming your capacities for presence. So just weigh it up, just think about it. So one of the sentences that is again and again expressed at the beginning instructions to practice in the suttas is reduce the craving for the world, reduce the neediness for the world. Little bit, get simple. A little bit, kind of renounce. Be a little bit austere. Just, it's artificial, it's external, but it's a place that you need to pay attention to. Reduce the neediness, just so that you can start to practice, you can sit down without too much burning for what I missed, what I need, I don't have this, I don't have that, I need the oh, I didn't have the food that I want, I didn't have my relationships that I usually have, I don't have this, I don't have that. Just kind of cool that down a bit, even if it's an external aid, and then sit. So externally it's helpful, and that's what we're doing here in this retreat. We're setting up a little bit of an artificial condition that aids calmness and insight, and we can appreciate it, and we can do it again and again, and it's available for us, and thank goodness that we can do it. We should really thank goodness, because it's not always possible and it's not always available. But of course the internal side is the real work. And here what we practice is to gather our attention, to gather our attention, to work with our attention. And the attention is not, the concentration that we need is not just like a cat that sits like for 10 hours totally focused on a hole waiting for the mouse to come out to eat it. It's not like a man sitting. When I was traveling a long time ago, I hitchhiked to India in 1967, I think. I hitchhiked from London to India, and I was passing through Afghanistan, and I remember traveling along the Khyber Pass, and some of the tribe people there that I met said, you know why we're such strong people? Because we train our young men to sit all day with a rifle ready for people passing through the Khyber Pass, and that we have to, and there's only one shot. So we can sit 12 hours watching with a rifle, watching who's coming along the Khyber Pass, because it's like a very steep valley. And that's not the concentration we want, or we are trying to learn here. It's more like another friend of mine who's a painter, who said, I can paint for 12, 15, 20 hours, and I'm just so absorbed and so inspired. I hardly eat, I don't need to sleep, I don't need to drink, and I'm painting, and I love it, and the colors, and I'm inspired, and I just forget the world, and I'm painting. It's more that kind of attention. That kind of attention, which has in it love, it has in it interest, it has in it care, it has in it indeed gathering yourself together to be present with what you're doing. It also brings joy. At the end of this period, there's pure joy. My painter friend is, end of a whole night of painting, is feels very ecstatic, not exhausted. There's something very relaxed about this form of concentration or of calming down. And it's an interesting story from the texts that the Buddha went through years of very intense concentration practice with teachers before his awakening, and he afterwards reported how stressful that was and how extreme that was, that it gave him qualities and powers, but he didn't recommend it. And one of the interesting ways in which he described this is he said, I realized that the quality of concentration that is needed needs joy. And I realized it because I remembered that when I was young, it happened to me spontaneously when I was a young boy sitting under a tree and my father was working in the field. And I remember that concentration, and that for me is right concentration or right samadhi or right calmness. And I'll just quote to you from Sutta how he describes this. He said he thought after most difficult, grueling, really struggling concentration with his teachers, could there be another way to enlightenment? And then came the thought, while my father was busy in the field, while I was sitting in the cool shade of a rose apple tree, quite secluded, quite means contained and separate from sensual desires, and secluded from things that are not helpful, I had direct knowledge of entering upon and staying in the first jhana, which is a state of concentration, a state of calm attention, which is accompanied by thinking. It's not no thinking, it's not blank. It's accompanied by thinking and exploring, it's active, with happiness and pleasure. Might that be the way to enlightenment? And then following that memory, he remembered that when he was young, he realized this is the way to enlightenment. And why am I afraid of that pleasure? It is a pleasure that has nothing to do with sensual desire and unprofitable things, or things that are not feeding, that are not supporting, that are not feeding me. And he said, he thought, I am not afraid of that pleasure. So this is acknowledgement that the work or our movement to concentration, to samadhi, to samatha, doesn't need to be painful. It doesn't need to be stressful. It doesn't need to generate more friction. And it can bring joy and ease. There has been a tendency in the Dharma world, and I went to many, many, many retreats with teachers who really stress this, which is discipline and hard work and a sense of success. And where there may be a role for effort, there is a need sometimes for effort, and sometimes there may be a need really to put yourself out for determination, aditana. There can be a need for determination. It's all right to have a period or to say, I recognize that, yeah, it's good for me at this moment to be determined, nechishut. It can be helpful. But it shouldn't become a kind of theory and a whole world of practice based on it. It's useful at a certain moment to have determination, but not to base the entire practice on it. The concentration needs discipline. It's male. It's achievement oriented. My flesh creeps when people say, in relation to spiritual activity, "Bahatzlacha," may you succeed. Hope you succeed. It's like, oh, it turns it into what? What's going on here? I've got to win the lotto. It's stressful. It makes measuring. We then get into a world like counting the breaths. I did this a lot at the beginning of my practice. I did a lot of this determination, a lot of this counting, a lot of this measuring. Was I better than yesterday? Is it worth it? Am I going on the right direction? How many days is it going to take? All this, and again and again and again. And there is, I think, a much wiser way of, and actually shorter, if you're talking about measuring. It's the ability, we can translate it as the ability to be with. The ability to be with. Samatha, samadhi, ability to be with, stay with. The word abiding is used. Abiding is like living in. You say abide, I have an abode called a house. Abode is a house. Abide is staying with, is living inside. It's being there consistently. Now being with is different. Being with is much more female. Being with is like the painter with his painting. Being with is like a mother with a child. You don't need to say to a mother, you have to concentrate on your child. You don't need to ask the mother to concentrate on the child. The mother is being with. The mother has her eyes open. The mother knows what the child is doing. The mother is listening to the child deeply. The mother knows what the child feels without the child being able to say anything. It's under 1 year old. The mother understands by attention, by being with, by watching, by connecting, by being close to. And this close to, this closeness to, is a much, I think, a much better way of understanding calm, abiding, samadhi, samatha. Sense of being with care, carefulness, care, interest. And these have an emotional content. These have also, as I say, a kind of a female side, or a male-female side. What are the what tends to stop this process? What are the blocks? The blocks can be hindrances. Hindrances are inbuilt restlessness that is exposed or appears, restlessness, confusion, and against resistances, tiredness, and we're going to talk about those later. This is not the time to talk about them, but these kind of forms of resistance come up, and they can act as blocks or actually they're also opportunities for us, but they come up and they kind of interfere with this calm abiding. What helps the calm abiding is to be balanced, is to be at ease, is to relax. That helps the calm abiding. And it feels there's a bit of a paradox here, because how is it that ease and relaxation, ninochut, we need that, but that's a result of calm abiding. So how does that work? That's the way it works. It just works like that. And that's the way actually that all the Dharma works. Things are not linear. Things support each other. Ease, joy, relaxation supports calmness. Calmness supports relaxation. Things work like that in the real non-linear world. We're not talking here about cause and effect. We're talking about something which is much more holistic. Moving the whole consciousness towards calm and abiding, calm abiding towards steadiness, towards calmness. We can see what's helpful, we can see what makes it more difficult. The body is very much at the center of all of this. The body is our I would say, vessel for this for especially in this retreat where we have a few days together. The body is the place, I think, where it's that much easier to practice calm abiding. We can feel the fullness of the bodily life, we can feel the body flowing, we can feel that slowly, slowly we can feel the body more and more, we can feel slowly where the stresses are, where the difficulties and the blocks are, we can let them go, we can breathe through the pain, we can breathe through the tiredness, we can breathe through the places that we feel are stuck or that we don't have connection with. We can open our connection to the body, we can work with the body. The body, as we relax the body, the mind is helped to be calm. As we flow with the body, we feel the life flowing in us. That brings the mind to calm, steady, ease and abiding and being with. So the body is the place where we can really, this is our field. This is our field where we explore. And as much as we can just be with the flow of the body, it has interest for us, it's our body, so we're very close to it. There's the flow of energy and life force in the body is really for us a wonderful place to rest, to experience ease and harmony, and from there calm abiding. There's a lot of just receiving, just allowing, just receiving. That's calm abiding. We receive the experiences of our body, we just are there with it, we invite it, if you like, and just receive it. That's being with. And it's a totally different energy from having to, having to catch 8 breaths. No, I receive the breath. I receive this one. I receive the next one. I'm just receiving. I'm just allowing. Nothing is forced. There's a sense of harmony in there. And that's important because it's teaching something to the consciousness which is opposite to friction and burning and struggling. So it has a value, a deep transformative value on its own. The more we can just feel this sense, receive the flow, the harmony, the life in us, we're actually going in another direction from friction, struggle, fighting the world, protecting ourselves from the world. There's a very nice quotation from Wordsworth in his poem Tintern Abbey, and it really is about this. And he says that serene means calm and blessed mood in which the affections, emotions or feelings gently lead us on until the breath of this frame, this body, and even the motion of our human blood is almost suspended. We are laid asleep in body and become a living soul, while with an eye made quiet by the power of harmony and the deep power of joy, we see into the life of things. It's exquisite. The eye made quiet by the power of harmony, not by the power of driving effort to concentrate. The harmony itself quietens the eye and quietens the vision. And when the vision is quiet, we see into the life of things. There is the insight. When the calm, this calm, quiet abiding allows us, invites the insight. We see into the life of things. We look into the reality in front of us, in us. So it all comes together, the calm and the awareness, calmness bringing insight, bringing working with mindfulness or seeing into the life of things. They work together, two wings of the bird working together. But we can get close. We can get close to stillness through, I think, a wise understanding of calm abiding, samadhi. Unforced, invited, received, relaxed, in harmony. So we'll take a few moments to sit quietly.